The spirit is our connection to oneness, to consciousness, to formless time. And the body is manifested in our experience as intuition. So when you feel intuition, when you feel a pull towards doing something, right? This is where you're starting to tap into what's called non-linear thinking. The mind is all about linear thinking, deductive, like if this, then that. Non-linear intuition, it's all about a gravitational pull towards an idea, and you don't, may not even know what the steps are to get there, but you know that's the right move to take.
Are you in the process of creating something huge and you want to understand how others have done it? Or have you already found success and still feel something is missing? Then this podcast is for you. Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge, a podcast where Alex Atwood chats with top performers to discover habits, routines, and alchemy that you can put to work in your own life.
Welcome to another episode of the Alchemist Lounge. Today, I'm excited to be talking again to Austin Mao. Last time he was here, we talked about prioritizing time over money and achieving some sense of peace through psychedelic ceremony and journeys. Today in this episode, we're going to talk about his transformation from a Vegas real estate tycoon to the founder of a psychedelic church outside of Denver. It's quite a story. I'm excited to hear about it, and I'm excited to share it with you. Austin Mao, good to see you, brother.
Good to see you.
This is going to be a chapter two of our interview. So this is exciting. You ready to jump right in?
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. So let's start here in the pre-interview form. You mentioned mind, body, spirit connection. And I think most people have heard some sort of terminology like that, but tell me what that means to you.
Great. Thank you. And pleasure to be back on this podcast with you, Alex.
Oh yeah. I'm looking forward to going through this. Super excited.
So there's a long history of psychology spanning over 100 years. Right. And now we're in what's called the third wave of psychology. At first, it was defined by Pavlov, where there are triggers like a bell being rung and then the dog salivating. And the prevailing theory is that humans are just like any other animals that have the same kind of triggers that lead us to feel things. Right. And so much of psychology was revolving around how do we identify those triggers? How do we avoid those triggers? How do we deal with those triggers? Right. To retrain ourselves. Second wave cognitive behavioral therapy was all about how the mind can influence one's emotions, right? And so training the mind to be more resilient. Now in this third wave of integrative therapy is this idea that the mind, body, and spirit are all connected, that mindfulness has a large place in the acceptance and compassion that we can feel towards ourselves and therefore heal our bodies of diseases, and listen to our bodies for the signals that provide us the intuition of what is actually happening with us in our experience. And so this mind, body, spirit concept is something that has practical terms for how we get to live our lives. And so much of the philosophy around ceremonia and its spiritual practices is to combine the psychotherapy, you know, that tackles the mind and body connections with spirituality to create this cohesion between all three of the ways that we experience the world. The way that I look at the mind is that it's like a sharp tool, right? This is where we get focus. This is where we have an idea and we can apply our willpower to enact that idea. And so as a sharp focused tool, we can experience and influence the world with clarity through our mind. The body is like a sensor, like a radar, right? It is more of a blunt object. We feel feelings, but it's sometimes very difficult to express what those feelings are because the expression is through the mind. And the body provides us these signals, which if we listen to it, we can discover the seat of our energies, right? When feelings are not dealt with, when we're experiencing shame or anger or guilt or grief, and we repress and suppress those feelings, they get stored in our bodies. And then that storage of energy provides us these kind of soured signals, right? These unclear signals of what to do in our lives, signals around a falsehood, to hate, to attack, to be in rage, or to numb ourselves from what the painful signals, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's discuss this a bit practically on a ritualistic sort of way. So I've been incorporating yoga into my daily ritual. And what I found is that I think yoga in general is mind-body connection. And the poses that I'm doing and the way, the time that I practice and all these other factors allow for that mind-body connection. So I want to know more about how we integrate spirit, and I want to understand, give me a very practical scenario where somebody, after going through integrative therapy, which we'll discuss here in a minute, but what's a practical scenario where someone can actually find themselves in that unity of mind, body, spirit? Like, what does it feel like? And what's a practice someone can do during the day, during the evening, that can start to have these elements connect?
Great. That's a really great question. And I love the framing around practicality. So much of the work around the mind is to train the mind to doubt itself. The mind believes its own stories. When we have a memory, we attach a story to that memory. For example, I've worked with someone who lost their family at a young age to a car accident. And this person was in the car. Very, very, very traumatic memory and life defining. When there's a story around that memory, a story engendered around grief, around suffering, around regret, right? Around responsibility that really isn't theirs, you know, then that can create a magnification of suffering in their lives, how they choose to live their lives, the kind of relationships they build, and the kind of affirmations they give themselves that they're the source of suffering, right? So training the mind to separate itself from the story, and in so doing, feeling in the body, feeling better. So then training oneself to be attuned to the body and how it can go from an apathetic, depressed, numb state to a state of joyfulness or a state of great pain, right? And instead of allowing the mind to wrap a story around the idea that pain is bad, but instead to view all feelings as a gift of being on this human plane of existence, then the mind can quiet itself down, right? And listen to what's truly there, which is the voice of the spirit. So the spirit is our connection to oneness, to consciousness, to formless time. And the body is manifested in our experience as intuition, right? So when you feel intuition, when you feel a pull towards doing something, right? This is where you're starting to tap into what's called non-linear thinking, right? The mind is all about linear thinking, deductive, like if this, then that. Mm-hmm. Non-linear intuition is all about a gravitational pull towards an idea. And you may not even know what the steps are to get there, but you know that's the right move to take. We've all been there. That could have been playing basketball. That could have been solving a difficult problem, right? But that could have been writing or doing art or playing music. The spirit manifests in our experience as inspiration. So this is when we feel a calling, right? And that calling is always a gravitational pull towards the major truths in existence. Love, oneness, peacefulness, gratitude, powerful words that express the underlying truth of the fabric of the universe. The practical steps to feeling that connection between mind, body, and spirit is to quiet the mind, which can be done through meditation. It can be done through the psychedelic experience. It can be done through moments of really tapping into the body, of tapping into that flow. We felt that maybe skiing down a mountain or scuba diving or intense deeply peaceful and present experiences with nature. Like in those moments, the mind becomes quieted. The body becomes a beacon for the spirit, a projection, a projector of the spirit, right? And then we come into this connection, this indescribable connection with what some call God, what some call the soul, what some call spirit. All words just to describe the single idea of unity, of expansion, of universality, of infiniteness. And that's practice.
Yeah. So we have our frontal lobe there in our mind, discerning for us, and also coming up with all types of different stories and scenarios. We have our body that gives us like a somatic response, right, to what feels good, what doesn't feel good. And when we start to turn our minds towards a more quiet place, are you saying that our body starts to show up as giving us direction, and our so all three of these start to work symbiotically? Is that what, like, the goal of that mind, body, spirit connection in your practice? Is that sort of what it is, being able to access all three of those as you go through life?
Yeah, in a sense, the mind constructs these layers around our experience of life as protection mechanisms. Every time you feel shame, for example, that's a protector. Every time you feel anger, that's a protector from an imagined suffering, sorry, an imagined pain, which is by definition suffering, right? When we imagine the future pain, our mind cannot tell the difference between truth and falsehood, between memory and reality, right? So recognizing that everything that we believe we feel is actually a protection mechanism from an imagined pain, programming that came from our childhood that we learned as baby, as helpless babies, right? That enables us to start to really get in touch with our bodies, with that intuitive self, that nonlinear thinking, that piece of us that doesn't require us to justify what we're doing because we already feel it's right, right? And because our bodies are that projector of the spirit, the deeper connection that we have with our bodies, it's the deeper connection we have with our feelings.
Mm. And so you take this and you connect it into your integrative therapy. That's how that begins to become applied to the people that work with you. So tell me how that, like, tell me specifically, how do you connect this into your integrative therapy? And give me an idea in terms of what exactly integrative therapy is for those who aren't sure about integration or why that's even necessary.
Sure. I'll give you some practices that we do in Ceremonia and some of the retreats that we run. So, you know, we begin with 3-day retreats and they're segmented as mind, body, and spirit. And each day has a focus while, of course, giving you access to tap into greater body and greater spirit, right? So one of the exercises around the mind is pulled from Byron Katie's work. Byron Katie is a best-selling author, a spiritual teacher. And her story is that she had this extraordinarily severe depression that she got out of from tools of the mind. Which it actually brings up a good point that the spirit can be accessed through the mind. It just can be more difficult because it requires a great deal of inquiry of the mind, right? Mm-hmm. And some of the great philosophers of our time, like Kierkegaard and Kant, have accessed spirit through the mind, through extraordinary feats of logic, right? So the four questions that Byron Katie came up with to help her access spirit by disqualifying the beliefs of the mind are: one, when you feel something challenging, is it true, right? She gives an example, Paul lied to me. Paul lies to me, is it true, right? Second question is, can you really be absolutely sure that this is true? Like really starting to get you to the point of starting to doubt your belief, right? Mm-hmm. Third question is, how do you react? How do you show up when you believe that this is true? So when I believe that someone lies to me, I show up in resistance. I show up guarding myself, I show up in disbelief, and I might show up already in anger just from the belief of it, even if they haven't opened their mouths, right? Mm-hmm. Number four, who would you be if you didn't believe this is true? What a powerful question. Who would I be if I didn't believe that someone lies to me, that I believed that they were doing their best, that I believed that this is their truth, that this is the way they show love, right?
This is, as you're going through here, this sounds like a great way of mediating conflict, right? Or disagreement on a group scale and individually. Continue. But I'm already seeing like there's big conflict resolution here, right? If you actually just listen, like, you know, if you actually just for a moment come outside of that, you know, that frame that you're in, you show up with every possibility. It's very cool.
Right. Exactly. Like, how often has the closedness, the certainty, and the righteousness that we've felt prevented us from connecting with people? That has magnified our separateness instead of allowed us to listen, to open ourselves to the oneness between us. Mm. Right?
Like, yeah. That's awesome. I could see the political discourse in this country needs some of this, just in terms of around the world. If people were to take this on, what an impact, what a powerful and impactful practice. Wow. Yeah. So as a psychedelic assisted therapy facilitator, right? Tell me exactly how you incorporate psychedelics, integrative therapy, mind, body, spirit. Like, how do they come together? Give me sort of the journey of somebody who is potentially facing challenges in life, depression, PTSD, you know, you name it, trauma. What does it look like to go through this journey?
Yeah, great question. So as I shared, coming into this place of awareness of our feelings and then the inquiry process, you know, such as using Byron Katie's The Work, allows us to really inspect the beliefs that have been embodied in our body, have been stored in our body, right? Think about, you know, when I think about all the times where I could not forgive because I was holding on to a grip of a belief, right? So many times I just would not talk to a person for years because of that grip. Who does that grip affect? I mean, it's both of us, but really my experience is I'm the one who's suffering, right? So coming into the space where we ask ourselves, what are we willing to risk to free ourselves from suffering? What are we willing to risk for freedom? That powerful question gets us to the place of courage, of taking that courageous step to say, I want a change. So the process of facilitation begins where we identify all the things that we believe we can't do, right? Every time you say, I can't do something, I can't forgive this person, I can't apologize to this person, I can't love this person in my life, right? To recognize that being in the field of can't is victimhood, is disempowerment. And to reframe that as I won't do this. I'm making a choice not to forgive. I'm making a choice not to apologize. Then going from I won't to I want to, which is a humongous step to say, I really want to forgive because I know that this will feel better for me. I know that this grip is creating suffering for me and creating suffering for that other person, right? Then from I want to I will, which is the step of courage, right? So going from desire to courage. And courage is the first step where in David Hawkins' map of consciousness, we're flipping from force to power, from weakness to strength, because we get to take responsibility for our own experience. So then going from I will to I am, the actual doing of the thing, right? So much of the facilitation revolves around guiding people through these steps. And then when going into a plant sacrament ceremony, where we get into the transpersonal psychedelic experience, we're by inspecting the layers of non-forgiveness, of righteousness, of resistance that we've layered on, that our ego has layered on top of our spirits, right? And then having the message of surrendering those layers, letting those go. So in the psychedelic experience, that enables us to penetrate so much deeper into spirit to find and finally observe, witness, and be the truth of it all, to really be in this place, in this field of love, of oneness, of compassion, of forgiveness, of really, really not just thinking or understanding, but inner standing that we're all trying our best, that we're all one, you know, that we're all living a human experience.
Hmm. Is this mind-body-spirit connection available after a psychedelic journey, available within the confines of a 72-48-hour period, spending time in a circle like that? Or is this something that is long-term? Is this something that someone should plan to go through 3 months, 6 months, maybe years of work in order to be able to make that connection?
You know, we like to say in sort of the psychedelic therapy space that it's like 10 years of therapy in 10 hours. And that's because the primary mechanism of most people's familiar forms of talk therapy, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, is through the gateway of the mind, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we go to a therapist, to a CBT therapist, right? And there are different modalities that are somatic, et cetera, that are more integrative. But focusing on what kind of the media portrays and what most of us know, that could take so many years to peel back the layers, to allow the mind to be inquisitive enough and to get enough practices that we can then bring forth into our lives and witness the positive changes when we disbelieve the mind. Like, that can take years and years of work to do, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas in the psychedelic experience, the way that it works, may I share how the current science explains the psychedelic experience?
You know, what's funny is one of my questions was going to be, how does science back this up? For those that are skeptical, like, where is there science behind it? So that was actually a question I wanted to ask. So jump into it right now.
Yes. So the Imperial College of London Center of Psychedelic Studies was the first to perform fMRI scans, brain scans of people on psychedelics and advanced meditators and children, right? And they found that all three shared a same quality, which is the default mode network gets quieted. The default mode network are two parts of the brain that govern patterns. A pattern might be, you know, a learned pattern might be, don't touch this hot pan because then you'll get burned. Mm-hmm. But another learned pattern from childhood might be, you know, don't give my heart fully to this partner because they may abandon me, right? When we're born, we're one of the only animals that are completely helpless, right? Mm-hmm. If you think about when reptiles or mammals are born, many of them can survive without their parents, right? Mm-hmm. They have the instinctual knowledge. So babies are born completely without ego. The ego is then formed as protective mechanisms because we assume as babies that everything that we experience out in reality happens because of us. So when I'm 1 year old and mom leaves the home to go to work, I may believe that's because of something I did to make her abandon me, to make her not give me love, right? Mm-hmm. And so these layers of protective ego form that construct patterns that are stored in our default mode network. And as we get older and older, that default mode network, that DMN, becomes more and more and more active. Mm-hmm. In the psychedelic experience, imagine that your mind reverts to a childlike state where those patterns are deconstructed. They're no longer strongly activated. And it allows you to witness as an adult the truth of life, right? The truth that, you know, as I shared, that we're all here to love each other, that we're all here to walk this inner journey. Just the very glimpse of that truth allows us to experience the entire band of human emotions, all the way from shame and fear and anger and pridefulness, all the way up to love and peace and joy and enlightenment, right? This creates what we call a reference experience. It's an experience that we know is true because we've experienced it. And because we've experienced it, we know that there's something more and better out there. And just like when when people have first experienced winning a trophy or the runner's high or skiing down the mountain, we can get hooked on that positive feeling. That's a good addiction, right? Because we start to seek out this inner truth. We start to seek out the peacefulness and the joy that is far beyond what we can access when we party or drink or make a bunch of money. It's something that is long-lasting and durable. It all comes from the mind, coincidentally. But the mind is just the sharp object, the focused, precise tool to help us, to help magnify what the spirit is capable of.
Yeah. So there's so much technology here. It's backed by science. It's now becoming more and more available and accessible in the West, which is phenomenal, which is going to give so many people access to healing, trauma, and structures and rituals that actually have an impact on their daily lives and their quality of life. I want to dive into Ceremonia, and I want to dive into how you're currently facilitating with Ceremonia. And when I think of church, and I'm sure when others think of church, usually a few things come to mind. First of all, there's some sort of deity, right? In most churches, there's some dogma associated with church. And most often when you say something spiritual as if a church, it could almost be looked at as a cult. So let me ask, tell me about Ceremonia in terms of how it's a distinction. Like, where's the distinction there that can allow those to join Ceremonia, join the church? And is there a dogma associated? Is there a deity associated with this particular church? Can someone who's potentially Christian or Jewish or Muslim, can they attend this church without potentially sacrificing some belief that they may have in their particular religion?
Absolutely. And that's a really profound and great question. Religions were originally created by human beings as a form of structure to guide people towards spirit, towards God, right? Towards these inner truths. There's a growing body of evidence and beliefs that the major religions were founded because of ancestral use of plant medicines. You know, I read that there's even a theory that the Ten Commandments, when given to Moses from a burning bush, that burning bush is theorized to have been an acacia plant, which when burned releases DMT, you know, which is the same DMT that's found in ayahuasca, right? Our religion, like any religion, has a statement of beliefs, right? It's just that our belief system is different from what we might imagine as a traditional religion. In a traditional religion, much of spirituality is externalized. God is some looming figure in the clouds, you know, like depicted in Michelangelo's paintings, that can be kind, but can also be angry,
right?
God is some being that we praise, right? That we pray to, that we are in service to. And it's our responsibility to bring as many people to that God as possible. That's what a traditional religion might look like. Our beliefs are informed by some of my transpersonal and psychedelic experiences, but also mostly informed by the collection of spiritual texts from Buddhism, from Taoism, from the great Indian teachings, which is that there's something called God transcendent and God immanent, right? God transcendent means the God outside, the God that transcends this plane of experience, right? That when I look at a tree, when I look at you, when I look at this computer screen, all of it are manifestations of God. Every being and everything is a manifestation of God. God immanent is the God within, that when I quiet the mind, when I have deep access to my body, and when I enter the spirit, I find that within me is also God, that I am also God, that everybody and everything is also God. And so, you know, while this is our statement of beliefs, we encourage anyone and everyone with whatever belief system to come in with their beliefs, because a core principle of ceremonia is non-dogma. It doesn't matter what you believe, as long as you believe something. Our belief is that everybody is a morsel of God, right? And we're all capable of embodying that and of tapping into that.
Now, when you first had the idea of ceremonia, have things shifted at all from where you first had the inception of this to where now you've landed? It's now you have a ceremony coming very, very soon. Has there been anything that's sort of shifted, or have things gone exactly as you planned thus far?
A lot has shifted and continues to shift, of course. You know, the interesting thing yeah. about this church is that it's also a startup, right? Mm-hmm. And I've run a few different, you know, tech and real estate startups in the past. And so there's all of this like organizational, marketing, and financial mm-hmm. elements to this work. And then there's the heart level work of creative force and content and sharing, you know, at a vulnerable level. And because this is my first foray into conscious entrepreneurism, right? It's also a huge part of my own internal journey. Mm. You know, one of the reasons why I do this work is selfishly to hold myself accountable to my own principles, to my own values, right? Like I get to be in integrity with everything that I share, everything that I guide, everything that I teach, because that's the only way I could do it. Right. Mm. And so as I navigate this mind, heart, or mind, body relationship myself, I find nuggets of wisdom in my own experience that then transform how I approach, how I think about, how I message, and how I plan for this church to grow. Right.
Mm. Yeah. So you're using some of the skill set from your previous life to build the church. And so it's a startup church. I love it. When is the first ceremony? When are you going to be starting to accept participants? Or do we call them parishioners in a church?
We call them members.
Members. Got it. Okay, good.
Yeah.
So when's the first ceremony, or have you already had it?
Yes, we had our first one in May. We have our next one on July 20th, and then we'll be announcing the third one in September, most likely third or fourth weekend of September.
Yeah. Austin, final question for you. In terms of, and I heard this argument a few times, and I know the answer, but Mary, my assistant, wanted me to ask you, because she's very interested in this work, and she said, which is dominant, the mind, the body, or the spirit?
I'd say that the mind likes to think it's the mind. The body likes to think it's the body. The body likes to feel it's the body.
Yeah.
But it's really the spirit. And when I say the spirit, remember I talked about God transcendent and God immanent, yeah. right? All paths lead to the same place, which is to oneness. Ram Dass shares this talk where he shares that he spent a lot of time in hospices sitting with people who are passing away. And he understands that many people are afraid of doing that, but he finds it to be so extraordinary and beautiful, because at the moment that somebody passes away, they achieve enlightenment. It's the final letting go. My grandfather fought his illness to the very last breath, did not want to die, was so afraid of it, right? My grandfather. Mm-hmm. But I can imagine that my grandfather, on that very last microsecond, you know, that final moment before we sleep, for example, there is a letting go, a surrendering of all the layers of ego, of all the stories, of a final peacefulness, right? And that moment, that microsecond, is enlightenment. We're all pushing towards that. So spirit, as God transcendent, as God immanent, as manifesting in our experience, we are also pushed towards enlightenment. The meaning of life, you know, everybody searches for the meaning of life, for their purpose in life. Mm-hmm. The meaning of life is so simple, really. It's to walk this inner journey, to come into the place of oneness, right? And when we understand that life is not just limited to this human life, to the 100 or so years that we're going to live, right? It's infinite in the sense that we're constantly living different lives in the future and have this karmic cycle that the Hindu tradition calls samsara, right? The cycle of life and death. And then the karma, the thread of the storyline, like the hero's journey of us finally through all these lifetimes getting to a place of enlightenment, of oneness, right? That's the meaning of life. And the spirit is constantly pushing us towards that without us even knowing, right? All suffering is here for a reason. It's to get us to suffer enough so that we want to so we build up the energy to make a change and to make that change to seek out peacefulness, to seek out spirit. And that is the guiding hand of spirit.
Austin, thank you so much for coming back on the show to go through and discuss mind-body-spirit connection, articulate a bit about Ceremonia Church. And I think that more of like what you're creating in Denver is going to cause massive, massive impact, not just there, but as it sort of ripples beyond, because others are going to start similar types of practices and start to incorporate this. And things have already moved so quickly in the last 5 years in terms of psychedelics and in terms of understanding the work that's involved in being able to get to that essence of life. And thank you so much for the work you're doing around it.
Thanks for listening in to The Alchemist Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. To catch all the latest from Alex Atwood, you can check out his website at alexatwood.co. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at The Alchemist Lounge.